Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses, and I do it for an audience of real entrepreneurs. Today's guest, actually, I feel she's a real entrepreneur and always has been, but for a while there, she was a reporter. And she was a reporter who found herself at some point in her life wanting to make friends. She didn't know how to do it, and so she did something that was kind of sort of against Tinder's rules, and she used Tinder's app to do it, and that turned into a business that we're here to talk about today. The business is called Girl Crew. The founder is Pamela Newenham, and Girl Crew is a platform for women to make new friends. This interview is sponsored by two companies you probably are so tired of hearing me talk about because I talk about them all the time, but it works, and so they keep buying more ads. The first will host your website, right? It's called HostGator, and the second will help you hire your next phenomenal developer. Oh, Pamela, if you only had this company back when you were hiring your first developers. The developer hiring platform is called TopTal. I'll tell you about both those later. First, Pamela, welcome.
Thank you for having me on. It's great to be here.
You're a reporter, so you know that I would ask this. Revenue. How much is Girl Crew producing?
Not enough. We would definitely like a lot more. We make revenues right now from advertising, events, partnerships, and premium subscriptions. However, right now we are concentrating on membership growth. So while we've tested lots of revenue streams and we are running them in the background, we are focused on getting more members right now.
So when you say not enough, how much are we talking about? Are we talking about 100,000, 500,000?
No, we're talking about less than 100,000.
Less than 100,000
yes.
A year or total?
Yes.
Since
yes.
The beginning?
Yes.
Wow. Since the beginning, how many members do you have?
We have more than 100,000 members, and we are across more than 50 cities around the world. From Dublin to London, Vancouver to Sydney, Toronto, Melbourne, New York, Austin, LA, you name it, we're in lots of places. We have concentrated on English-speaking cities, obviously, to start with. So mainly Canada, America, Australia, UK, and Ireland.
And so then how are you supporting yourself?
We have raised almost $1 million in investment. We were very lucky to get some excellent investors on board. We have the LinkedIn chief executive, Jeff Weiner. He's one of our investors. So is the chief marketing officer, Wrigley, Orla Mitchell, the director of data at Reddit, Joe Gallagher, the CEO of PCH, Dean Casey. Lots of excellent investors, and they have a lot of experience in building global networks. They have scaled huge at networks around the world, be it Reddit or LinkedIn, and we hope that they can help us do the same.
You know, Pamela, you're really good at getting in front of and hanging out with impressive people. What's the thing that you guys did with Mark Zuckerberg, and how'd you get to do that?
We were invited by Facebook to celebrate their 12th birthday with them, which was excellent, and we got to meet Mark Zuckerberg and Sheryl Sandberg. And there was a very small group of us there, I think only around 25 people. So that was really exciting. And we got a very big tour of Facebook headquarters. And then we got to meet with them and talk to them about our community and what we were doing. And it was extremely exciting because it was all very unexpected. They'd contacted us. They wanted to feature us on Facebook stories. And they flew a team over to Ireland to go to various Girl Crew events. And make a little video, which they put up on Facebook stories. And the next thing we knew, they were inviting us over and got to meet them.
And the reason that they liked you and wanted to have you come over is that you created a community on the Facebook platform. Your whole business started as a set of groups on Facebook. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
So we built a company without having our own platform to begin with. It was all purely accidental, and it just kept growing. We started initially on Tinder. It was my co-founder, Elva.
You know what?
Harry.
Hang on. Let's go through it in chronological order because I do want to get to that Tinder story. I think that's just it put a smile on my face when I saw how you did that. But let's get to know you first, and then I want to know how you came up with this idea, how you went from being a journalist to being an entrepreneur. I know you've wanted to do this for a long time, and what I like about you and the reason that I wanted to have you on here is, when we asked you in the pre-interview, how did you get your users? You didn't just say, it's a great product. And when you create a great product that people need, people just show up. That's not the way it works. And you got really clear about what you did and how things worked out for you. So let's just go back and get to know you a little bit, because a statement that stood out in my producer's notes about you is when you had a conversation with our producer, you said, as a kid, I was always entrepreneurial. I was money mad. What does it mean that you were money mad?
That is very true. I wanted just money all the time. It's like, buy whatever I wanted. If I was on holidays with my family and I saw a giant blow up crocodile or a blow up dolphin, I could buy both of them. And I could be bouncing around in the swimming pool with my two giant floatables. If I wanted to go like an aquarium on holidays and my parents might say, oh, it's much money, I'd be like, I can pay for that. I have the money. And anything I saw in the shop I wanted, I could get. Because it used to be the case when I was a kid, my mum would only let us get a treat on a Friday. So if we wanted a chocolate bar, we could only get it on a Friday. So I start getting really interested. And then we'd go to the shop and she'd be like, oh, I don't have any money. And you'd have to wait till Friday. It was like her way of doing it. And my dad would be the same. So I quickly learned I need my own money if I want to get whatever I want. And so I started coming up with lots of various business ideas so I could get money.
For example, there
was a country market where I lived and it was on every Friday. And I used to make biscuits, cakes, and jams. And my gran taught me how to make them all. And I used to sell them at the country market. I also used to go and buy boxes of chocolates and go around all of our neighbors and sell raffle tickets to win the box of chocolates. But I would get way more tickets than the box of chocolates cost. So I'd make money that way. I would also go around doing Baba Job, where I would ask them for money to do jobs for them, be it cut their grass, polishing, or cleaning.
But did you have the guts to go to strangers and say, can I cut your grass today?
Yes.
It didn't take you, you didn't have to stand outside their place, work up the energy and say, you can do this, Pamela, you can do this. You just go in and did it.
Nope, I would always just go in and do it.
Why? Where would you get the courage to do that and not be afraid that your friends would see you, that you would embarrass yourself, that this is not what's done?
Well, sometimes it was a little bit hard in that they might say, no, I don't have any jobs for you. And I would have to be like, okay, well, if you think of any, I'll come by in a few days, because there was no mobile phones back then. There was no cell phones. Not as if I could have said, call me. We had a landline, but I didn't really want them like ringing the landline of my parents' home. So I would just have to suck it up and go about, just continue on. But most of the time it worked. Probably the best thing I ever did with my sister and my cousin, my dad had a farm next to a golf course and he had a very tall maize in the farm and corn and wheat and barley. And the golfers were always hitting their golf balls over, but then they couldn't find it because it was all so tall, so they couldn't find any of their golf balls. And we would walk behind the combine harvester when everything was cut. And we would collect all the golf balls and sell them back to the golfers.
Yep.
One day, this one golfer was really irate. He obviously like recognized these really expensive golf balls. And he was like, these are definitely my golf balls. Like, I want to take them back. And we were having none of it. We were like, no, you have to pay for them this much money. But it was really good. And actually, I remember one particular day, this golfer like basically took 50 golf balls to him because we hadn't realized expensive golf balls were. So initially we were kind of underpriced and he took 50 golf balls and he was like thrilled with himself. So afterwards we were like, ooh, we better up our prices.
I'm on the Irish Times website where I see posts that you wrote like for your diary, family values drive growth of 6th Ireland car rental business, 32 small businesses compete for national enterprise awards. This is you writing this. How does somebody who wanted to be an entrepreneur so badly that she would go and get golf balls and sell them back to the owners become a journalist instead of an entrepreneur?
Well, it all boils down to a movie starring Reese Witherspoon called Legally Blonde. Uh-huh. And I saw that when I was in high school and decided I was going to become a lawyer. And I wanted to be exactly like Reese Witherspoon in Legally Blonde. I had really blonde hair at the time. I loved wearing colorful clothing and I was very matchy-matchy, like all my outfits match all the time. I went to university and I studied law at university, both in Ireland and in the United States. And while at university, I fell into journalism. I got very involved in the student newspaper and I became their chief news reporter. And then I got involved in the student radio station and I had my own show. And then I set up Ireland's first ever student television station. I recruited people from all over the university to take part in the student television station. I got it up and running, and it's actually still running to this day. And I just developed a passion for journalism, and I really wanted to work for a national newspaper. So I applied to the Irish Times for an internship. And it was weeks. I kept contacting them, and it was weeks before I heard anything. Eventually, I got an interview. And it became very clear that they didn't do internships. They hadn't taken on an intern in over 10 years. They tended to only recruit people who had years and years experience in journalism. And I begged them. I said, please, I really, really, really want to be a journalist. I told them I had written more than 96 articles for the university newspaper. A lot of those articles would have been applicable to the national press, that some of them were even picked up by the national press. And they expressed major concerns that I was running a TV station where I had 150 people under me and how I would cope with being the bottom of the bottom in the Irish Times, like the lowest ranking journalist, having been the top of a TV station with 150 people under me. But I assured them I would survive. And so they gave me an internship. And very early on in the internship, I realized I was getting terrible stories. Like, they were assigning me things that they were never going to publish. It was basically, oh, we'll just send her to this just to keep her distracted and busy, but we're never going to write an article on it. And that really annoyed me. I remember once they sent me to a book launch and a few other journalists in the newspaper had said to me, oh, you may as well have fun at that because they don't write published stories on book launches.
Right.
Otherwise, like, that's not national newspaper unless it was some humongous book.
So then you did something really gutsy to change the course of your career there. Talk about what that is.
Is it leaving the newspaper? Yes. I was working as a legal correspondent for years and I decided I really wanted to become a business journalist. I wanted to write all about startups, entrepreneurship, technology. I begged the Irish Times to let me change sections. They wouldn't let me. They wanted me to continue to be down the courts, reporting from the courts. And I handed in my notice. I left the Irish Times. It was actually a very sad day because I'd been there a good few years. I had really good friends there. I really didn't want to leave. It was an excellent salary, but I left. And I went to another publication. And I even got a card from everyone. I'd arranged a going away party, everything. But eventually I came back a week later. I became a business journalist with the Irish Times a week later. So that was a bit awkward.
Wait, so it's you left? You said, I'm leaving under protest. You guys are not taking me seriously. I'm out of here. You got everyone to send you going away cards. And then did you just walk back in a week later and say, actually, you should give me another job?
Well, no, a week later on the phone to me, they said I could move. I don't think they really thought I was actually going to leave. And when I did leave, I think then they realized, oh, actually, they need me.
Because I see that once you left, they said they felt like you were more valuable than they realized. And they called you back and they gave you the job that you wanted. Wow. All right. That makes sense.
And that was kind of awkward on the first day because people were saying to me, what are you doing here? I thought you left. And I was like, I'm back.
All right, nice protest.
And then I carved out a niche for myself then in technology, startups, entrepreneurship. I wanted to write about really positive things. I had been writing about a lot of negative stuff. That's why I wanted to leave. Then the courts every day, I was writing about like murder cases or repossessions cases, bankruptcy cases, people losing their homes, their businesses, you name it. It was really negative the whole time. So that's why I really didn't like it and didn't want to do it anymore. And so I was determined, as being a business journalist, I didn't want to be caught up writing about the global financial crisis and like other negative stuff like that, the banks collapsing, you know, properties going bust. So I carved out a niche myself basically in technology, innovation, entrepreneurship, and learned a lot interviewing lots of CEOs and writing about startups.
And you knew that you wanted to be an entrepreneur. In fact, it seems like you were talking to them about how you could do it too.
Yes. So I was learning the whole time I was interviewing them. I was asking them always, where did they go wrong? What mistakes did they make? What would they do differently? How they could have raised money, how they were hiring, what kind of, you know, investment terms or everything and anything I could learn. I was trying to garner as much information as possible.
And Pamela, this wasn't necessarily for the articles. I don't see this stuff in your articles. It's for you to learn also about entrepreneurship and business because you felt like you wanted to do this. In fact, you would have, correct me if I'm wrong.
No, you are wrong. It is in my articles. I'd say you just haven't gone back far enough.
Okay.
But there were several years there. There was in 2014, I won Technology Journalist of the Year and I brought out a book all about it. And I'd interviewed a huge amount of companies and startups. And I had written a lot of pieces about how to set up a company, how to hire people for a startup, how you should structure your startup.
Yeah, that's not showing up for me when I'm glad that you corrected me. That's not showing up for me when I go back. In fact, when I hit the more articles on your profile page, it just sends me into a big search instead of showing me more of your articles.
Okay.
But you know what? I'm starting to see a little bit. The more I hunt in here, the more I see some of your other work. You really publish a lot there.
The best.
One of your ideas was some kind of onesie. What was the onesie idea that you had?
Oh, yeah. Onesies for your pets. So at the time, like, onesies weren't even fashionable. Actually, after I had that idea, onesies became really fashionable. But when I was a kid, obviously, lots of babies and kids wore onesies. And I thought it'd be hilarious to have, like, doggy onesies or onesies for your pets. So that was one business idea I had. I kept trying to come up with different business ideas. And I would go talk to very senior business people, entrepreneurs, company founders, people who had exits, and tell them about my various ideas. But they always told me they were terrible.
And then somebody gave you advice, said, you know what? Instead of you coming up with ideas, here's a better way for you to start your business. What was a better way?
They said, I'm excellent at executing things and I have a lot of experience in executing things. So I should find someone else who has an idea and help them execute it, help them turn their idea into a business.
And that, actually, that's not what you ended up doing, though, is it?
So that is exactly what I did.
You did? All right, let's take a break here. I'm going to talk about my first sponsor, and then I'm going to come back to this Tinder hack immediately, and we'll talk about how Tinder hack and this and the way you came up with your idea. But you were saying something that I think fits in really nicely with my sponsor, HostGator. You said for a long time, you basically just had a plain website. You might not have even had a developed, deep, rich website until, what, a year or two ago?
Yeah.
Because you mostly published on Facebook. Then you have the app where most of the action happens, but you also have a website. I think for a lot of people, we're discovering that you don't need a website to do a lot of things. Like, you can publish on Medium, you could publish on Facebook, you can publish on Instagram, you could build your community on Facebook groups, or frankly on Slack, etc. But we still need a website to let people know who search for us, how to find all those things, and frankly, to also own a piece of our business that's not dependent on Facebook allowing us to do this or that, or Medium adding claps or removing claps or adding a title bar that we don't like or whatever. We want a page that lets people know where to go and also is fully in our control. And that's why many people go to HostGator and just use the one-click install to install WordPress. WordPress is an easy way to publish any content online. Lots of themes so you can make it look exactly as you want. And if you go to HostGator.com/Mixergy, you're going to get a super low price for all this. Whatever your idea is, bring it to HostGator. And if you don't like your hosting company, bring that to HostGator too. We signed up for it at Bot Academy, my second business, the one that I've been pursuing as a side project. And we started out with an inexpensive plan. And then as we grew it up and grew it up, I kept calling up HostGator and saying, do you have a better plan? Do you have one that will accommodate more traffic? One that will allow us to speed up our load times? And they did. They have lots of packages. You could start with the cheap ones and then move on up as your business grows. If you go to HostGator.com/Mixergy, they'll tag you as a Mixergy person, which gives me credit, frankly, and also allows you to be part of my community. They'll know to take super good care of you because I have a big freaking mouth. And anytime any of my listeners have a problem when they're with any sponsor of mine, they know that they could count on me and my team to jump in there and help out. Go to HostGator.com/Mixergy, start your website right, or move yours over. They will make it super easy for you. And if you don't love them, they even have a 45-day money-back guarantee. But you will. I do. We've signed up, I think, for a 3-year contract with them because we liked them so much. All right. Thank you, HostGator. The Tinder hack. Tell me about that night when you did it. It's not like a hack in that you
it
broke into this system.
It wasn't me that did it.
What'd you do? What happened that day?
Elva was at home one Friday night. She
I thought that was you who did it. It was Elva Friday night. Now I get it. Okay. Yeah. So Elva, you and Elva met how?
We met at a surf summit for entrepreneurs. There were lots of entrepreneurs on this weekend away, over 200, all surfing. And Elva and I were there, but neither of us were very good at surfing. So we got to know each other chatting around the campfire on the beach at how bad we are at surfing.
Okay.
And that's how we met. We weren't friends before Girl Crew. And we have our other third co-founder, Onya. We weren't friends with her either. The three of us all came together for business purposes only.
Just because you met her at this event, you pinged her, you stayed in touch, and then she had an experience where, what was she doing?
Yes, so she had already come up with the idea for Girl Crew and done the Tinder hack when I met her.
Yeah, tell me about the night that she used Tinder. What happened that night? What was the problem she was facing?
She really wanted to go out one Friday night. There was a club night on, and she really wanted to go to it. All of her friends were busy. She texted, messaged everyone, and they were either working late, they were doing stuff with their boyfriends, they were abroad, or they were doing things with their family. So no one was free. And she was very frustrated by this. She felt she couldn't be the only person who has friends, yet all their friends are busy and no one is available to do stuff with them when they want to quit. And her sister had the idea that she should go on Tinder and see if anyone on Tinder would go on the club night with her. But she wanted other women, like, to go on the club night, as in she just wanted friends. She didn't want to go on a date. So she set up a profile as a man, so she'd only appear to straight women on the app. And she wrote on her profile that she wasn't actually a man. She was really female, and that she was just looking for some platonic dancing buddies to go out with. And if anyone was interested, to let her know. And she thought maybe two or three people, you know, might get in touch. More than 100 did. And it was very complicated trying to message them all individually to arrange plans. So she set up a secret Facebook group, added them all into it, and that's how Girl Crew started. And in fact, she had stepped away from her computer to just do some jobs around the house. And when she came back, they had already planned the night out.
So anyone who responded, she added to the Facebook group.
Yeah.
And then they just started chatting and they planned a night out. Yeah. And it was how many people? 100?
More than 100.
More than 100 people who did this.
Yeah.
And then they went out. Was it weird to have over 100 people all out together?
No, not that many ultimately went out.
Okay.
I think, as you know, probably know, often with events, lots of people will say they're going, but not everyone will go. So there was a much smaller group that went out ultimately when they did it.
You know, I remember when I moved to LA, I would just post, I want to go hang out, who wants to hang out? I would even do it on Craigslist to just get a complete blind response. And for people who would join me who aren't as social and extroverted as I am, it was a little weird and awkward at first. For me, it was fine. I just move them along and we keep moving. Was it awkward for her? Was it awkward for the people who showed up?
Initially, because you're kind of like, hi, what do you do? How are you? What's your name? As it would be with anytime you meet someone for a date or at a networking event, there is a tiny initial awkwardness, but you quickly get over it. And everyone was in the exact same boat, which made it much easier. Like, for everyone, it was their first time meeting someone. No one had an advantage. And that made it much easier. And that's actually one of the reasons why Girl Crew works very well at all of our events, when everyone goes and they are a bit nervous, but everyone else is in the same boat.
So everyone went out, had a positive experience. What's the next evolution of this that led to Girl Crew the business?
So it continued growing. People started telling other people about this little secret Facebook group where chat is happening, where events are happening. And so more and more people started getting added to the group and it started growing. And Elva left that little profile on Tinder as well. And so a lot of people who were joining were either from Tinder, so they were single, or their friends had added them in. So the vast majority of people were single. And one day, someone had the idea that they should all change their profiles on Tinder to have the exact same profile. Just for some fun. So when the men went on Tinder, every single profile would be the same. Because at this stage in Ireland, it wasn't massive. Tinder wasn't massive. So when, you know, it wasn't as if like, you know, loads of people were on it. And one girl had the idea that they should all change their profile to be that of former president of Ireland, who is a woman, Mary Robinson. And so they did that. They all put their photo, Mary Robinson, as their profile photo. And they had their little bio, which was like, you know, former president of Ireland, all of that. And when people messaged them, they talked back to them as if they were the former president of Ireland. And very quickly, men started ringing into radio stations, started contacting, you know, web, like kind of for, like online forums and like news websites, wondering why all the women on Tinder are Mary Robinson.
Okay.
And there was a lot of discussion about it, and eventually it came out that was, well, girl, it wasn't called Girl Crew at the time, but that was what would become Girl Crew.
What was it called at the time?
Tinder Crew.
Tinder Crew. Okay. And so it just kind of came out that this thing, Tinder, that these women on Tinder Crew were having so much fun, partially at men's expense. Yeah. And then that drew a bigger crowd of people to come and check out what is this Tinder Crew thing, a crowd of women.
Yeah. And it was actually around that time the name changed to Girl Crew as well. So it was maybe the earlier news articles were Tinder Crew, but then it became Girl Crew for the later news articles. Because some people didn't want to tell people they're in this Tinder Crew, especially as it was getting media coverage. So the name got changed to Girl Crew. And after all, it was a lot of national media coverage in newspapers, radio stations. After that, people started making contact from all over Ireland, wanting Girl Crew groups in their city. And even people moving abroad, if there were Irish people moving to Sydney or London, they were wondering, the Girl Crew be set up in their city? Because they would say, I'm moving to New York. I don't know anyone there. Can you set up a Girl Crew there so I can have friends when I move?
How many people would you say you'd need in a city for this to work out?
It depends on the size of the city. But we, smaller cities can manage perfectly with a few hundred. And it does really well. Dublin, which has a population of 1.5 million, it took us to get to 2,000 members in Dublin for it to become really buzzy.
And it was every group had to have its own Facebook group of people who were talking. And you, okay, so you were going to say something. I've got a follow-up question, but I want to let you finish if there was something more you want to say.
No, I was only saying that 2,000 for Dublin was when it got really buzzy, but other groups, it got really buzzy after 200 people. It just ended on the size of the city. But it goes the other way as well, because ultimately we got over 20,000 members in Dublin. So that was nearly too buzzy at times.
The thing that I'm wondering is, it's hard enough to manage one Facebook group for one business to keep people talking, because if they don't talk, then it becomes kind of dead, and then Facebook doesn't show it, but also people who show up don't, on their own, don't see anything happening, and everyone gives up on it. Facebook, the people who are in there, and then the company that runs it. Frankly, I know I've had that happen to me. How do you then manage that many groups on Facebook and keep people engaged?
Well, we couldn't. That's why we had to come up with our own app. We had more than 50 groups in the world. Lots of groups had over 10,000 members. So it was chaotic. We were getting hundreds of requests every single day to join the groups. We were obviously having to verify all the people before we could approve their request. And then we were also trying to maintain all the groups to make sure that there was no bullying or like horrible comments said, or just even like fake news or anything like that. So we were having to monitor them all. And it was proving extremely difficult to maintain more than 50 groups around the world. And also we had issues with Facebook algorithms that when more than 500 people were in a group, you could no longer invite everyone to an event, which really upset lots of members because, for example, they might have got invited to the monthly book club every month. And then the second it got over 500 members, they didn't get invited anymore. So they'd be wondering how come they don't get invited anymore. And even worse is they might have just invited a work colleague or a friend new to the city to join that group. And for some reason, that person would get invited and they wouldn't. And so then they'd be very upset. So we realized we were going to have to move away from Facebook and create our own platform where it would be easier to manage them all in one area and that we wouldn't have issues with that.
You know, one of the things that I noticed as I was looking at your notes was how many times you referred to your co-founder as a girl and other people girls. And I said, wait, this is wrong. We have to edit it. What's wrong with my producer? We're not calling women girls here. And I realized, of course she is. It's part of the name. So then that makes me wonder about the name. I know you guys at one point said, you know what, Girl Crew, which was suggested by one of your members, maybe sounds a little bit too young. You considered Lady Crew. You decided not to do that. Why not?
It sounded too old.
And so you just said, let's embrace this thing that sounds fun and youthful and we'll accept it. It, in some ways, could have some pejorative connotations, but not in our world.
The odd time some people ask us, is it for like young children, like girls? But most people in their like 20s, 30s would refer to their female friends as girls, like, hey, girls, or what are you up to, girls? You know?
You know what? I find that too. And the only time that it feels weird is in business when I see that there's some people who refer to the women they work with as girls, like, here's the girl who does this. I go, that actually, in that case, it doesn't sound right. It's all right. So I get a sense of this thing and you say we need to create our own app, and still that became a problem. Who did you go to build your first app?
We initially outsourced the development of our app, and that was a really big mistake because we had no technical advisor and no one on the founding team was a technical.
So you just went to some outsourced dev shop and you said, we're giving you money, build it for us.
Yes. And we didn't, we spec'd everything out, made very clear what we wanted, but we can't code and we didn't know what good code looked like. So if they showed us a bit of code and would say like, oh, this is, you know, what your thing looks like at the back end, that's going to be brilliant. We were like, okay, we knew no better. And very quickly problems arose because we were supposed to have an app delivered and done in April 2016. And we had told everyone we had an app coming out, our whole community. And our community had helped us even raise some investment money to get this app out. Our community had paid for us to fly to Silicon Valley to meet investors.
Wow.
All three of us. So we were feeling like very embarrassed at this stage that they had helped us go there. They'd given us the money to do that. We'd got the investment. We told them the app was coming out. And next thing, there was no app ready. And in fact, it was nowhere near ready. And so then we were told May, then we were told June. And then next thing we discovered, actually hardly any coding had been done at all. And it was all a big disaster. And we learned that we were going to have to bring development in-house and we were going to have to hire our own developers. The problem with that is because none of us know how to code or program, how were we going to interview these developers? Because they could tell us they were brilliant developers, but we would know no better. How would we know if they were good or not? So we had to find a technical advisor, bring them on board, and then they could interview the developers. And we needed someone who had a lot of experience with developing things and had some experience, you know, with developing social networks and the likes. So they could interview the developers for us.
And that worked out.
Yes.
Because the outside person would interview your developers, tell you who the right people were. You then hired the people internally. They built out your software for you.
Yes.
How much money did you waste going the wrong way?
More than 25,000.
Wowee. Yeah. 25,000 pounds? I mean,
Euro,
excuse me. That's what I meant to say. Wow. All right. So that's a lot of money for a new company. Basically, all the money you had at that point.
Yes. We were all still in our jobs at that point. We hadn't gone full-time in Girl Crew. And we were basically putting money from our jobs and various events and advertising things that we did towards this.
All right.
So we lost all of our money.
Speaking of money, let's talk about revenue then. That's super painful. I can't get to use the app because you guys won't let me because I'm a man. I realized later on, I have a fake Facebook account that is a female, Asian female, which means that I get into a lot of stuff. For some reason, the bias works very favorably if you're an Asian female, if you're trying to get into Facebook groups. But what you guys do is you screen out the people who come in. I use my real account, and that meant that you guys were seeing that I'm a man and you wouldn't let me join in. What I saw, though, of screenshots was pretty impressive of how your app is now. What I'm curious about is the revenue that now you experimented with. You said that you guys tried advertising and there was something you didn't like about ads. What was that?
All the ads we've done, we've been happy with. We made a decision that we didn't ever want to run ads that would make our members feel bad. We ourselves didn't like go online and seeing ads that go, lose your belly fat or get slim quickly, take these diet pills. Like, we were forever being bombarded with ads that made us feel bad about ourselves. We decided as a company, we did not want to have any ads like that. And not only that, but we wanted to have ads that would benefit our members. So when a company would approach us and say, can we run some ads? We would say, this company that our members would be interested in, e.g., are you a makeup brand? Oh, yes, they would be interested in that. And then not only would we charge them to run the ads, but we would make them give our members a discount. So we wanted the ads to benefit the members. So when they saw it, it wouldn't be so annoying. They'd be like, ooh, I can get 20% off here. This is not bad.
That doesn't scale really when you need a lot of ads, but it does work really well at your scale. And so you were able to generate some revenue from ads. You have to do it all yourself. Do you guys have an in-house ad person?
Nope.
That's you.
Yes, all of us, the team.
Everyone on the team. You also do events. How does events fit in with revenue?
We charge for tickets for the events, but we also have some partners such as Microsoft and Dell EMC, PayPal, various other partners that we've worked with. And they give us money as well towards the events and towards being basically our partners. So it's effectively like sponsorship, but it's on a year level.
Why would Microsoft support you? I'm looking at the app in the description here. It's saying meet new friends. Why would Microsoft care to help women make friends? What does that have to do with the tech company?
Well, I think Microsoft are always trying to hire more women. And so they would have access to women because they come along to our events. We've had the head of Microsoft speak at our event, the head of Microsoft in Ireland. And actually, she's speaking at one of our events coming up in May as well. And they can come along to our events and meet lots of women who potentially they could hire. But they also want to be seen to support women in their careers and, you know, be backing women to get ahead and do well in their careers. So that's why they want to be partners with us.
Okay, so events. And I could see that would scale if you eventually do some bigger events that people can come to, maybe like the surfing event that you went to from, what was it, Web Summit?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And then the final thing that you guys tried was premium memberships. What do people get for premium memberships and how did that work out?
So it's still going. We have premium memberships up and running and it's going very well. We organize 4 events per month, so 1 per week. And we kind of sell it as we organize the events so you don't have to. Because on the app, for all the free version, all the members have to organize the events themselves. But in the premium version, we organize them. So every week, they will know that there's either a brunch on or a night out, a cinema trip, kayaking, a hike, you name it. And they know all the events 4 weeks in advance. So they can like see the calendar for the month ahead, know all the events coming up. And they also get lots of discounts. And a lot of companies definitely want to, get to know our premium members. They will offer very good things, be it like free drinks and food at a bar or restaurant. And that makes it very interesting.
And so do people, they pay to be premium members to find out about the events?
Yeah.
And in some cases, they pay for the events too.
They do, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you know what? When I was in New York and decided I was going to explore the social side of my life, I would find these small organizations that would do that. They would just take you outside of the city and go horseback riding or go to a winery or something. And inevitably, these things would break up when the founder would find somebody, get in a relationship, and you know, just be in that relationship. Even if they didn't get married, if they were serious, they just had no time for it because they couldn't find a way to make it make money. And so if it's not going to make money and they found their relationship, what else do they need from it? They move on. I always thought somebody could do this on a bigger scale, and it sounds like you're doing it. Do you find that that happens with the participants, that when they're in a relationship, they don't need this anymore? Whether it's a relationship that's a romantic relationship, or they find a few friends locally that they signed up to meet, and now they don't have time to meet new people?
Funnily, we do, but it's not, they don't need the events anymore, but they still need the online chat.
Really?
So on our platform, people spend a lot of time chatting, looking for tips, recommendations, advice. You might say, hi, everyone. My parents are coming to visit. I need to bring them to a restaurant, but I don't want anywhere like that's too expensive. Where should I bring them? Or they might say, has anyone ever used this website? Is it any good? Can I trust it? Or they might say, I've been dating a guy for 2 years. And he's gone abroad on a work trip for 3 weeks and I haven't heard from him. Should I be worried? Who knows?
Yes, like, you should. I'm going to say yes. Okay, how do I answer that? Get me in the crew. I will answer it. All right, let me take a break to talk about my second sponsor. And then I want to come back and say that there was something else you guys tried that didn't work out. I read about it online. It wasn't in my notes, but I want to bring it up here to you. But first, man, you probably need to know about this. There's a company called TopTal where anyone can hire phenomenal developers. I've said this for so long that someone in my audience, a guy named Derek Johnson, listened and said, you know what? I know this guy, Andrew. I've seen him in person. He's a good guy. Let's try it. So he didn't actually make the call himself. He asked his CTO. It was a small organization. So he said, hey, look, CTO, you go make this call. CTO called into TopTal and said, we're having trouble. We've talked to 20 to 30 people. It's a long process. We can't find the right person to hire to be on our development team. What do you got? Because I'm so skeptical. I think I send my audience into the world being skeptical. Like, all right, what do you got? So he goes, what do you got? And they talked to the CTO. They understood what was going on at the company. They understood how the company worked. And they said, all right, we got a couple of people for you to talk to. Just two. Not 20 to 30 people, but we understand what you're looking for. We're matchmakers here in this space. We've been doing this for thousands and thousands and thousands of people. We'll get you two people. We understand what you're looking for. We do this well. And so they introduced the CTO to two people. The CTO interviewed them, grilled them, understood who they were, hired one of the two, but basically said either one would be fine. Hired the one, and then came back to Derek Johnson and said, you know what, Derek? This guy is so good. He could be the CTO of our company. The company's company name is Tatango. And Derek contacted me. We talked and he said, this TopTal is so phenomenal. We're going to continue to hire from them. If anyone out there is listening to me, just like Derek was, and you've heard me say this and haven't taken action, don't wait to be in Derek's situation where you're talking to 20 or 30 people who are not the right fit. Just make a call to TopTal. There's no obligation. You follow this URL that I'm about to give you. They'll know you come from me. They'll get on a call with you. They'll understand your needs. And Pamela, you and your team should do this too. They'll set you up with two, maybe three people who would be the perfect fit. Don't take it on faith. Have a conversation with them. Go through, grill them. And if they're the right fit, you can often start within days. Here's the URL. And Pamela, you're going to want to write this down after this interview is done because you're going to get 80 hours of TopTal developer credit when you pay for your first 80 hours. And that's in addition to a no-risk trial period of up to 2 weeks. They want you to be 100% satisfied. When you hire people, there's no way to be 100% satisfied. TopTal found a way to make that happen. So here's the URL. It's top as in top of your head, tal as in talent. That's toptal.com/mixergy. toptal.com/mixergy. Not mix energy, people. Mixergy. You know, Pamela, there's someone I put out an application to, like, I'm trying to find somebody who can be our VP of operations. I went to TopTal. I said, I've hired from you guys a lot. Will you do this? They said, no, we can't do it. They helped me put together a job listing for it. I put it out. This one woman said, I would love to work for Mix Energy because, and then she wrote why. And then she said, and one potential guest could be Tim Ferriss. And she wrote Tim Ferriss with one S. I just stopped reading. I messaged her back. I said, you're excluded. And because I would want feedback I'm going to give you feedback. It's not mixed energy. Look at the top of the application form. It's Mixergy. Just spend a second. And it's not Tim Ferriss with one S. It's Tim Ferriss with two S's. And so I didn't say it like that. I said, I'd want to know. I think this job actually can use a little more detail than you might have put into this application. I'm sorry. But boy, that's frustrating. All right. What was it called? You did some kind of wingman, wing crew. What was it called?
Wingman. It was called Wingman.
Yes. And so you put it out there. How did you put it out there, this wingman thing?
On Facebook. So this was when we had the Facebook groups and we were only on the Facebook groups. We had no app at this stage. And we had been on various radio stations and various other things. And men had all said they would like a guy crew, basically. They would like to meet guys, especially if they've moved to a new city, they would want to have guys to do things with, or even in their own city, might have drifted apart from some of their friends. Maybe their friends were kind of settling down, having kids and stuff, and they weren't. And we decided we would set this up. It didn't work. It failed. We discovered that guys don't like chatting online in the same way that women do. Women will chat about anything. Guys won't. Guys like talking in places where there's specific topics like soccer or rugby, that kind of stuff. But they don't just like having general chats about anything.
Yeah.
And they also didn't want to go meet like five strange men in a bar for a night out, whereas women would have no problem with that.
Yeah, I would love it. I don't know that I'd want five, maybe like one or two, and then go out and meet women. Not that I need that now. I'm in a relationship. But yeah, that totally makes sense. I've got to say, I don't know if I introduced it as a failure, but in my mind, that actually is a really interesting way to launch. There was no website, no app, no involved process. You just say, we're hearing people say they want this. Let's put it out there and see the feedback. And if you would have gotten any positive feedback that sent you in a promising direction, you could have explored it. Since you didn't lose anything other than creating a Facebook group.
Yeah.
I do think that there's room for something like this. And I think you were right that for men, and I think you were right to find a niche. What I found that makes that works similar to you for men is the nomad apps. Digital nomad communities that are essentially for men, even though they come across as just for any kind of nomad. And what they're trying to do is say, you're a guy, you don't know anyone. You're not going to say, I don't know anyone. You're going to have a hard time meeting people. We'll help you meet people.
We found it works when there's a mixed group. So in Dublin, we have one group that's called Girl Crew Dublin Guys and Girls. Most ridiculous name ever, but we weren't bothered about the name. And that has over 10,000 people in it, and it has lots of men and lots of women. And they have no problem chatting online or going to events when there's women. But they did when it was just men.
Do you think,
but we
didn't
want to become a dating
app. Girl Crew Dublin, guys
went.
And girls. I see it.
Yeah.
10,000 members, 9 posts a day on average in that group.
Yeah. But we didn't expand it to any other cities because we didn't want it to take from our original focus of being like a platform for women to make new friends. And also we saw at times it slightly leaned towards dating element, which was hard to always combat. Like at events, people were going because they wanted to meet a potential partner. And we didn't want to become a dating platform. So we just left it in Dublin and never expanded it to any other city.
So it is a really interesting way to experiment. Just Facebook groups is a way of seeing if people care about this. You have all the tools that you need for people to communicate, but not enough that it becomes a business on its own. So you're forced to figure out where the breaking points are and then create an app that does it. And the breaking points for you were invitations. People were losing out on that. Messaging, that I know becomes an issue when you're in Facebook. And what else? What was another pressing issue that you saw in the Facebook group that led you to create the app?
The fact that there was no central reporting system. So, for example, we had so many groups all over the world. And if someone reported someone in one, like there was no one area where we could see all of the people reported. Sometimes someone might get in trouble with one group and one of us would have dealt with it. But that same person could be getting in trouble with another group.
Right.
You know, whereas if we had had one central area, we could have seen that very easily.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Like they might have been putting, because we don't allow anyone to post any ads. We don't want the groups to be spammed with ads. So no one is allowed to advertise at all, especially like multi-level marketing or anything like that. We didn't want people to be posting things like that. So what would happen is someone might post it in one group, they would get banned from that group, then they'd be doing it in another group.
Yeah, and I thought you meant with reporting that Facebook doesn't give you any data. They give you a little bit of data on the groups, but not enough. You want to know who's super active, who's not. You want to know what's working and what's not. They're getting better at giving you that data, but I'm finding that it's still not enough. Not enough. What I miss is in the old days of WordPress groups where you could add plugins, there would be plugins where you could give people awards for doing certain things. Like the person who got the most likes on his comments would get an award. You could create leaderboards so that whatever action you're encouraging people to take, there is a leaderboard of people who've taken it the most, and it encouraged everybody to both appreciate the people who are on there, but also try to be there. Especially if you wipe it out each month, there's a shot for everyone to get on that list. I miss those little homegrown tools. And one of the problems with using an off-the-shelf piece of software like Facebook that's so restrictive is you just can't do that.
So the funniest bit of like feedback we got on our app is someone contacted us saying, it's not like Facebook.
Like, that's a problem. You know, since we are talking about the story of how you got to 100,000 members, let's talk a little bit more about how you got members. You said it was Tinder. Then you did that whole Tinder thing where you guys all pretended to be, what was her name? Mary Robinson. Mary Robinson. And that helped you guys get a lot of promotion. When somebody leaves a city, you encourage them or enable them to create a new group in whatever city they're in. So that helps a lot. It feels like when somebody, and correct me if I'm wrong about this, but it feels like when someone uses your app, there's an incentive to get one or two friends of theirs to come in there too. Am I wrong about that?
No, there's no incentive.
Not that you actively incentivize them, but it feels warmer if a friend of yours is also trying it with you.
Yeah. They feel less shy about going to events for the first time. Word of mouth is massive for us, but a very specific type of word of mouth. But I don't want to be very general and just say, oh, word of mouth. What we have found is word of mouth works really well. A, in companies, when someone has started at a company and they've moved from another city or another country, the company will often tell them, you should try Girl Crew to make new friends, or flatmates. People are often look for flatmates on Girl Crew or advertise their apartments like to find a flatmate on Girl Crew. And often when people move in to a new house from another country or city, their flatmates will tell them, oh, have you seen Girl Crew?
So then do you work with real estate offices to tell them that they might want to pass the word out about you, or with HR representatives?
Not on a formal basis, but definitely at any event or any occasion where we would meet someone like that, we would be very conscious of telling them all about Girl Crew and telling them if they have new employees or new tenants coming to the country, to tell them all about Girl Crew.
And then in the app, if someone's coming to an event, is there an invite a friend feature too?
Nope, there isn't. Not yet.
Okay.
Hopefully we will build that, but we don't have that yet. But people can bring a friend, and like often they will tell. It depends on the event. Some events, they don't want to tell their friends about. Like right. We chartered
What's
a yacht.
An event that you don't want to tell a friend about?
Chartering a yacht, because then you want to be able to tell your friends that you went out on this yacht trip with all these other people. That they weren't part of it.
And it feels a little, yeah. What about,
majority of events,
one will. Thing that struck me, you emailed me personally, I think, to come on. Was that you manually emailing me, or do you have someone on a team? You don't have people on a team yet to do this, do you? But when you did it, what struck me was you did something that very few people who want to be on podcasts do, which is you said, here are a few topic suggestions that I think would work with your audience. And I rejected three of them, but liked one. And then we ended up focusing on that one. And then I came back and I talked to you about it. And the responses made me understand that you understand my audience. You're good at it because you were on the other side of the PR machine. You were someone who was trying to sift through this, write articles and so on. It strikes me that that's partially what makes you guys good as promoters of Girl Crew, that you have that experience. Tell me a little bit about how you use that experience to get so much press for Girl Crew.
When I was a journalist, I used to get 400 emails per day on average. I'm sure you can sympathize with that. And I often used to, I wouldn't open lots of them unless it had a really good subject line. I didn't open the email. Or if I did open the email, I wanted to be able to scan really quickly and identify what the possible story was. I didn't want to have to read like 10 paragraphs. If I had to do that all the time, I would have no time to actually write any articles. So when we wanted to contact press and send out emails, we were really conscious of having a really brief email, no press release attached, and just bullet points of what the potential story would be. And the story changed depending on what the publication we were contacting. So if the publication was all about like startups, we'd keep it like all about kind of creating a startup, founding a startup, the issues. If the publication was all about like investment, we would keep it all about that. So it was a lifestyle magazine, we would have all like kind of featurey things. So depending on what publication was, it was tailored for them.
I'm looking at your email now on that computer. just to get a sense of what you did. So the subject line was Andrew, and then that brackets that people do when they're introducing to each other,
yeah.
Girl crew. And so in my head,
that
it just...
That wasn't my idea, but it works well.
Yeah, I must have looked at that and said, someone introduced me to this company. Let's see who the introduction was. So it doesn't explicitly say, I'm a friend of yours. I'm introducing you to someone you should know, but it feels that way. It's Andrew.
We used to try the subject line one, but it didn't work as well.
What was the other subject line?
E.g., we might say like, exclusive or story or pitch, colon, like girl crew launches in America or girl crew making new friends city by city. We try different ones. They didn't work as well.
And you say, hi, Andrew. I'm Pamela, the co-CEO of Girl Crew, a platform for women. You in a short bit, you tell me what it is. And really short. I hate when people write long. I don't read long email. And then I'd love to share with your audience any of the following topics. And then I skim the topics. I thought the Mark Zuckerberg birthday thing was interesting, but too cute for us. The how we got to 100,000 members in 46 countries. That made sense. I like big numbers. And so I hit on that and I followed up with you. And then we made this happen. Now that I'm going through this, it occurs to me that you're using some software also to see who's opening up your email and how many people are clicking and who they are. What software are you using for that?
I actually don't know the name of that because we have a crowd helping us who actually have been on your show.
Who is that?
And they are Banff.
Who is it?
Banff.
And Banff is doing this for you?
Yes.
Ah, so they set you up with this and you just have to let it roll.
So they help us identify always who has opened our emails, because then if they don't open our emails, we will send a second email.
Right.
And if they don't open the email again, we will send another email. And one thing I definitely have learned from it all, and I knew it myself as a journalist, sometimes it would take someone to contact me two or three times before I'd be like, oh, yes, them. And so I'm not afraid of doing that. Whereas I think a lot of people are. They would feel like they're harassing people and they don't want to send them more than one.
In some way, frankly, it is a little bit of, I wouldn't call it harassment, but it is pushy and it is annoying. But frankly, you got to be pushy and annoying. If you're not the kid who's willing to knock on people's doors and say, do you have a job for me? You're not going to get a job. If you're not the kid who's willing to go pick up the golf balls, you're not going to be able to make the revenue to go buy the candy and the blow-up things that you want for the pool that your mom won't get for you.
Yeah.
All right. So we've learned a lot in this interview. Congratulations on getting to 100,000 members. Congratulations on getting an app that actually works. If anyone out there wants to sign up and they're a woman, they should go check out it's girlcrew.com, right? You actually have the domain.
That's correct.
I went back in time to see, apparently you guys bought this from someone else for like, they were asking $1,700 or so. What'd you guys pay? Do you remember?
We paid around that. Yeah, it was, I actually think it was more like $1,900, but we paid them what they were asking because we were terrified at that stage. We'd had a good bit of media coverage and we were terrified they would look us up, see that we were taking off, and like boost up the price big time. So we just kind of contacted them, not from a girl crew email address or anything like that, just contacted them and said, yeah, we want to buy it, we'll pay that.
Yeah, nice move. It is a good domain, easy to spell, even for someone who's typo prone like me, and easy to remember. All right, so guys, go check out Girl Crew in the App Store. Check out the, frankly, just check out the website. And I'm grateful to you for being here. I also want to talk about, just to close this out, a friend of mine, the first person I ever hired in business, someone who I'd been friends with going back to high school, is working on this pitch competition with a $25,000 in prizes. I want to tell anyone out there who's got a business that's interested to go check out nyhealthchallenge.com. nyhealthchallenge.com. It's an entrepreneurial boot camp and pitch competition with $25,000 in prizes for products and services that strengthen the relationship between patients and healthcare providers. They want to strengthen relationships between patients and healthcare providers. So go check them out at nyhealthchallenge.com or tell your friends about it if you guys are interested. So many people who I've interviewed have started raising money, or actually it's not even raising money, got money for their businesses in the beginning from pitch competition. So this one seems like a good one if you are helping strengthen the relationship between patients and healthcare providers. And since I'm pitching here, two final messages, hostgator.com/Mixergy and toptal.com/Mixergy. Pamela, thanks so much for doing this interview.
Thank you for having me on.
Right on. Bye, everyone.